Hey, podcast listeners, it's Anne here, and I want to welcome you to the beginning of our celebration of National Poetry Month. And first off, if that sounds a little irrelevant or even frivolous, given the urgency and, you know, the gravity of the issues that make the news every day, well, we are arguing that poetry has everything to do with the news. So let's begin here with a brand new poem ripped straight from the headlines.
Inaugural. Let me repeat, of the different varieties, it's the guilt of being one without the attendant narratives of fire and night. Children littering the shore like sea glass, or walking across entire continents, souls bloodied, coupled with the fact that I've never used the word to describe myself, not once in 43 years until today. Refugee. Yes, I have always called myself an immigrant, but it is only now, in this icy light, that I bend my knee and bow, the top of my head sword-kissed. Once, I got on a plane. I left. It was done. I became me. I did not suffer in the way of such suffering, but I am a refugee from a war this country conducted. May this be the dawn of an era in which we do not have to live a particular life in order to respect it. The way 19th century art brought us the word empathy. Before then, there was only a luminousness we had to believe was there.
Quan Barry is an award-winning poet and novelist. She was born in Saigon and raised in the U.S., and she's an English professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is the same campus where I work, so I see her around town. A few weeks ago, Quan emailed that poem to me and to a few other friends, and she also announced that for the rest of the year, she's going to be writing and publishing one new poem a week in response to current events. Now, as a journalist, I think this sounds great. So we got together here in the studio to talk about starting a new radio series, The News from Poems. Okay, does that work?
I will try it.
Okay, good. That's great. I love that. Amy, tell me about writing that poem. What was going on in the world, in the news, in your mind?
So I wrote this poem roughly the week before the inauguration, but the poem has a bit of a backstory. So in October of 2016, I met the writer Viet Thanh Nguyen, who won the Pulitzer Prize last year for his novel about a Vietnam spy who comes to the United States, a novel called The Sympathizer. You know, I know in reading some of his works that he always refers to himself as a refugee, and he is a refugee. His family, they were boat people. They lived that very particular exodus from Vietnam. But for me, I've never really thought of myself as a refugee because I don't have that story.
How did you come here?
I was born in 1973, and I left Vietnam in 1974 when I was 6 months old. I was put up for adoption. I don't know anything about my biological family. I simply got my passport, I got on a plane, I left, the rest is history. So I've never identified as a refugee. But obviously, in thinking about things that have been happening recently, you know, we're only thinking specifically about like Muslim immigration, Muslim refugees, and realizing that refugees come in all shapes and sizes, and that I now need to count myself among this population. I need to let people know that, you know, refugees like me don't have accents. There are many ways in which people would never think of me as being a refugee. People don't even think of me as being an immigrant. And so I felt like it was really important for me, like I said, to stand up and be part of this population.
Hmm. So you wrote this poem as part of a larger project that you've just launched online and also here with us on this show. Mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
It's a website called asphodel.info, the news from poems. That particular name comes from a poem, a long poem that was written by William Carlos Williams in 1955, in which he says, "It is difficult to get the news from poems, yet men die miserably every day for lack of what is found there."
What does that mean to you, the news from poems?
So I think what he's saying is this idea that the news can give us facts, but it's poetry, it's art that asks us as readers or as viewers to do a certain kind of work to interpret these things, and that particular work is sustaining. You know, it nourishes us. So like many people, I watched the elections. I watched the lead up to the elections, the 2 years, you know, how we actually arrived at this particular moment. And November 9th, many of us in this country woke up and thought, the world is a world that I hadn't previously imagined. And for me, it's really important for artists and for all of us as individuals to leave a footprint behind. You know, oftentimes we talk in terms of carbon footprints, but I think of this as an artistic footprint to sort of document another way of looking at things.
We should explain what this project actually is.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of skipped that part earlier.
The way it's been currently structured is that I myself, each and every week, have just been posting one poem that I've written that somehow is informed by happenings in the world. But now I'm looking to expand that project. So for National Poetry Month, which is the month of April, I feel very lucky to have signed on 4 amazing poets. So there'll be a different poet each week sharing their views of what it's like to currently be living in this particular culture.
That sounds fantastic. And I also think you're, with the William Carlos Williams reference, saying that there are things that artists, that poets can see and document that journalists can't. So what, for instance, do you think a poet could document that might not show up in the news otherwise?
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily a question of subjects. I don't think there's any subjects that a poet could document that a journalist couldn't. I think it's a question of ambiance. It's the idea of moving beyond the facts. I was thinking of it almost in terms of like a restaurant. You know, if you go into a restaurant, this is what you ate, but what was the atmosphere? What were the other kinds of things? And to me, that's what artists and poets can document. It's that other stuff. Like I said, it's a world beyond facts.
Poetry deals with the realm of the irrational, and that once you're in that world, there are feelings, things, insights that are going to come up that are not going to in the, you know, the journalistic world of objective reality.
Absolutely. So when we think in terms of the irrational, you know, there have been many poets who've written about it. Many of the Spanish surrealist poets of the early 1900s, there's this idea of something called duende, which nobody can quite put their finger on what that word even means. Like, is it the irrational? Is it the idea of living in the presence of death? Again, nobody can quite put their finger on it. The American poet Robert Bly talked in the 1960s about this idea of the reptilian brain is what he referred to it. He would argue that that particular remnant in our brain somehow goes back to when we were reptiles. And yet that particular aspect of our brain still has wisdom and still has knowledge in it, but that we have difficulty accessing it because it is irrational in certain kinds of ways.
Are you also, with News from Poems, wanting to redefine in any way what we consider to be news? This is something I think about a lot, because if you pick up a newspaper, or if you, you know, look at CNN or listen to NPR for that matter, you're going to get a certain category of stories. A lot of them are going to be negative, because that's sadly what makes news. But why isn't it also news that the first robin showed up today? Why isn't it also news that 2,700 5-year-olds walked to school today? I mean, there's so many, what we consider to be news has to do with what we pay attention to, what we notice. And that, you know, as you were saying, is the art of poetry, is to pay attention. So I'm wondering if you're wanting to use poetry as a way to encourage us to pay attention to different things.
I think that's absolutely true. I hadn't thought of it with respect to the word news itself, but poetry in many ways is about being in the present. It's about celebrating the present moment, because sometimes we can get lost in the fog of all kinds of things that are happening. I do think that in many ways, poetry can help sort of expand the ways in which we take in news. You know, in the old days, you got a newspaper, and then maybe you got radio, and then we had TV. And obviously now, because of the internet, you know, news is looking very, very different than it used to. You think about Twitter, you think about 140 characters, right? So I feel like more and more news actually is becoming poetry rather than poetry becoming the news.
Say that again. I love that.
Well, so in thinking about it, I'm really kind of interested in this. So oftentimes when I talk about literature with my students, I'm always telling them that they know a lot when it comes to fiction. They know a lot about fiction because we all have seen movies, we watch TV, they've read novels, so they know things about how stories are told, right? But oftentimes when it comes to poetry, people think that they don't know anything about poetry because it's not in our culture. And yet the truth of the matter is that poetry is in our culture, but in many ways it's actually as advertising. There's a whole way in which we interact with poetry on a daily basis without maybe recognizing it as such.
I so love it. The idea that here I think that I'm surrounded by ads and I have Coca-Cola jingles and the ads for Virgin America or whatever. Maybe it's all just poetry coming at me.
You know, in a way it is. And again, obviously it's used for various effects. But it's the idea, if you think of poetry as being compressed and charged language, then that kind of is what advertising is. So yeah.
And what about Twitter? Is Twitter a giant poetry feed?
You know, in many ways, again, the idea of the word poetry comes from the Greek poieo, which basically means to make. So basically a poem at the end of the day is a made thing. Poets are makers. So if you have that really broad definition for what poem is, then yeah, then Twitter and all its pros and cons could be considered a poem.
Well, but this suggests that we're living in this age of the democratization of poetry in which we have all become makers.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that in many ways this is sort of the best of times for poems. You think about seeing poems on buses, on the subway. You know, there's more and more students taking creative writing classes. I think that sometimes people get scared when they hear the word poetry and they think of poetry with a big P and they think of what they learned in high school. But the idea that, no, poetry can be poetry with a little P. And again, it could be in your shopping list. You know, there's a whole category of poetry called found poems.
What's a found poem?
It's almost like when, if you think of the really famous, is it Duchamp, urinal? Like it's in the 1920s, he took a urinal, he put it in a museum, and he called it art. But it was a urinal first, but then again, it was a found art piece. So found poetry is similar. You take a piece of already pre-existing writing, and you either format it as a poem, you title it, and voila, you have a poem.
The other thing I love about the idea of Twitter and Facebook posts and Snapchats and Instagrams, all of these as forms of poetry, and the idea that we've all become participants in this endless stream of making, there's something to me that is so hopeful and healing about that, especially in the face of the now 24/7 news cycle, which can be, you know, relentless and depressing. And I think the act of making is the exact opposite, right? Because news you receive, news is done unto you in a way. Making is maybe the therapy.
In thinking about it, that obviously, you know, we make individually, but I do think that there's something about it that speaks to community and speaks to connection. Oftentimes when we make things, we are kind of thinking about an audience, even, you know, if we're not thinking consciously about audience. And so I do think that, like I said, that there's this element of community, connection, outreach that's present in that process.
Well, this is very hopeful. Amy, thanks.
Thank you.
Quan Berry is the author of 4 books of poems and a novel, which is called She Weeps Each Time You're Born. She's an English professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she's curating our new poetry project, The News from Poems. We just heard episode 1, and we'll be back next week with another episode. We'll be hearing from Palestinian-American poet Fadi Judah. This is To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and these folks. That okay?